Hi, I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa.
Due to the pandemic, we bring you One Bad Mother straight from our homes, including such interruptions as children, animal noises, and more. So let's all get a little closer while we have to be so far apart. And remember, we are doing a good job. This week on One Bad Mother, movie moms, plus Biz is slipping, Drea Clark stops by to co-host, and we talk to Chloe Cooney about her article, The Parents Are Not All Right.
Woo!
You did such a good job wooing, Drea!
I feel like I maybe went a little more Haunted Mansion than raw enthusiasm, but that, like, the heart was there.
Given the days that we are in, Haunted Mansion seems appropriate.
Sure.
So before I let everybody know what's happening, I want to do what we've been doing at the top of the shows since the virus started. And that is just to say what a wonderful job you guys are all doing out there. I cannot believe how long this is going, even though I know facts. And yet I'm still amazed every day that this is life. And I just want to say, we want to say a big thank you to all the essential workers, everybody who is on the front lines, all the healthcare workers. You guys are amazing. And everybody who works in the healthcare industry so that many other healthcare workers can work, data entry, procurement. I mean, like all of it, the chaplains who work at the hospitals. I mean, you guys, I really see you because many people can't get in to see their loved ones right now, and you guys are really a bridge. And so I just want to give a special shout out there. Everyone at the grocery stores and at all the delivery services. And I know that in lots of places, businesses are going to start opening up with curbside pickup, etc. I really love you guys. I really appreciate it. And fucking teachers.
Yeah.
Fucking love you guys. What?
I'm with you. I'm also the good job. And in this time, I've been someone who's very much like constantly looking for silver linings or my own moments of gratitude or like, how can I spin this so that my head still stays as sunny as possible? And one of those things has been that the level that people have had to appreciate and value work that is not always recognized. And that also goes for, speaking of your show, the idea of caregivers in general. So there's such a long undervaluing of what caregiver work means and support at home and keeping families running and keeping households running. And there has been something about the recognition of that in this time of how much of a burden and a weight that is and how much of an achievement it is.
Guess what? People have families.
You're right.
You know, like, sometimes people have them and it's not invisible or hiding when you're not at your job. Now, with all of that said, a special shout out to Teresa. She has, again, there is a lot of attention she needs to be giving her family right now. And it's a lot. And we see you, Teresa, and you're doing a remarkable job. And I'll say it again. If I could come to hell with you, I would. If they would let me in with you. I mean, they'll let me into hell. Do not get me wrong. Do not get that. I'm sure there's a tattoo somewhere that says that on my body. So, but we see you. You're doing such a good job. So there's that. And now, Drea Clark.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just to let everybody know who you are a film producer, a film festival programmer, and a podcaster. That's kind of the most awesome collection of jobs. You co-host Max Fun's Who Shot Ya, which is a movie podcast that isn't just straight white guys. What?
I know.
Is that possible?
And who knew?
And Ticklish Business, which covers classic Hollywood films with a feminist viewpoint, which we could just do a whole nother show as a woman sure. studies minor. I would love to talk about the color purple and like Amazon women in the avocado jungle of death. I mean, I just.
Nice.
So many. Those were also the last times I ever saw movies. So, Drea, welcome to One Bad Mother. How are you doing? And I hope you'll be brutally honest.
I'm actually good, and I think that it's appropriate, and thank you for having me as well, but I also think it's appropriate in answering that for getting the call to help in a sense of, so I don't have kids myself. As I was telling you, I have cats that I ask a lot of questions of that never truly answer me, but I am a mom ally from way back.
Yes.
And not to brag, I'm friends with lots of moms.
What?
But yeah, I know. It's true.
Those are my credentials.
But oddly, in this time, one of my highlights, so I'm self-isolating shelter in place. So I haven't seen another person or another human in person for over 2 months now.
Holy
which
shit.
Which is a very different experience
yeah.
than so many people have. And it's really brought to light the idea of, whenever this all finishes or whenever a new normal happens, the idea of this time, what everyone's gone through is so uniquely specific to them. And there isn't really a shared experience. There are individual experiences and trials, and that feeling is going to be so different from everybody. And of course, that's how life is,
yeah.
which is a dumb realization that took me like 2 months of this to figure out. But it's true. Like, so how we go through everything, but I think it's been exacerbated in this. And so being here today and getting to be a part of your show and hopefully like helping step in has been something for said friends with children. I got to a couple weeks ago, one of my best friends from college texted me and she's like, oh my God, my son has this freaking paper to do on Romeo and Juliet. I can't, I'm out, I'm bust. I was like, yeah, set me up. I fucking love Shakespeare. So I Zoomed with her 16-year-old boy, which is probably his biggest nightmare in the world. Talking to some woman he hasn't seen since he was seven, definitely doesn't remember. And who's asking him like, so what do you think the nurse represents? He's like, who are you? But I have the time for that. I have the bandwidth because I'm not doing that all the time. And I think there's something about having relationships hit this point where we're filling in those holes. So where I am is I feel pretty good overall, largely because of said always looking for silver linings. That said, I watched a movie last night and I sobbed for 43 minutes straight, and at least 20 of those minutes were after the movie ended. So,
nice.
You know, we have our moments, but yeah.
Yeah, I have so many things. I want to touch on when you said about the, like, the different experiences. We have delved into that a lot in parenting because the papers, the magazines, the commercials, all of that would really like you to think there is one way to do something, and there is not at all. So I like to think of it as the collective experience of everybody doing the best they can in their different situations,
yeah.
right? Like what works for one person does not work for somebody else. And that's one of a bazillion people like that.
Right.
That is, everybody's not going to come out of this 100%, but like what your individual experience is, yeah, they're completely different and they deserve the respect and allowing it to be identified as different, right? Like,
right.
We constantly talk about it's not a competition. I'm not here with my children at you. Trust me, that would be the last thing I would do with somebody. And you're not isolating at home at me, right? Like, it's.
Yeah.
Can I ask what the movie was?
Yes, it's a movie we're talking about on Who Shot Ya, my other podcast. This week, it's called Driveways by Andrew Ahn, and I adored it. It was tears because of grace, but it was also tears because it's a film about this young boy and his mother, And they go to clean out the house of her recently departed sister, who is a hoarder. And then she lived next door to Brian Dennehy, and it was his last role. So there was already ties of that. And there's this little kid who's befriending these old people. And so then I just started thinking of, I was like, oh, I have all of this older family that I don't know now if I'm ever going to see again.
Yeah.
I don't know what travel's going to look like. So it was the movie, but it was also, it was one of those like perfect keys that fit into like this bruise lock in my brain that just all of like, oh, there's all the sadness I have. Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
There that's it goes. Where I've been keeping it. I've been keeping it there.
Yeah. Oh, it was right there. Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, it is. I'm very grateful for it. So now, Biz, I would love to know, how are you?
I'm physically here in the same place I've been. But I was going to say that what has been on my mind is the concept of the slippery slope. And we've spoken about it on the show, like, you know, but if you say yes to your kid about one thing, they are going to forever ask for that. And now, though, my slippery slope is I will be honest. I want so badly to see people. I want so badly to let my children see people, see their friends physically. And even with the, like, okay, we'll be 6 feet apart, or maybe we can do it in the yard, or maybe, like, people can drive by and see each other. My head then goes down the slippery slope of, okay, but then what if somebody wants to use the bathroom? Also, hey, do you know what kids are? They hate following those kind of rules, yes. Right? Like,
you know what kids love? Figuring it out exactly 6 feet between them and their friends.
They love
they
that.
They love it. It's their favorite thing. Slippery slope, indeed.
Slippery, that's going to be my new cocktail, the slippery slope.
Delicious.
Thank you. Thank
it'll
you.
Have to it'll have to be a single serving cocktail for safety purposes. Yeah.
That's right. I mean, it just completely destroys you in that one.
Yeah.
But it's the slippery slope. There's probably a fire involved, and the it could be. Get ready for this transition, guys. A lovely drink to have while watching a movie. Oh.
Please take a moment to remember, if you're friends of the hosts of One Bad Mother, you should assume that when we talk about other moms, we're talking about you.
If you are married to the host of One Bad Mother, we definitely are talking about you.
Nothing we say constitutes professional parenting advice.
Biz and Teresa's children are brilliant, lovely, and exceedingly extraordinary.
Nothing said on this podcast about them implies otherwise.
Drea.
Yes.
Movies. A lot of things we could talk about with movies, but just like I am a parenting expert, I'm just going to say you're a movie expert, okay? We're just for these purposes, I
could be a movie expert in the same way you're a parenting expert.
Exactly.
That's fair.
We're both in it.
We are in it. Yeah.
I want to take advantage of that, and I want to start. I feel like I've always felt that movies' portrayal of mothers has misled me greatly. Okay? It's like the Pottery Barn catalog of the child's room, where you're like, if I just paint everything white, my children are going to be really well behaved. So, And I feel like I also love apocalyptic movies. Like, I love them.
Sure.
And I am great at surviving an apocalypse. My children are not behaving the way that children in apocalyptic movies behave. And that's upsetting. So I guess I want to talk about, to start off with, this image of mothers. And if you say to me, movie with a mom in it, the first two things that come to my mind, which are horrible role models, is Mommy Dearest and the mother from the movie Sybil. Okay, those are horrible. Those are horrible mothers.
They're not great blueprints. You might as well throw in Piper Laurie from Carrie.
Yeah, Piper Laurie from Carrie.
Sure.
Plug it up. Yep, definitely.
Oh, or you could also put in, if you're going to like the twist of Shirley MacLaine's character in terms of endearment, which was, but kind of split the difference because was sort of a nightmare human.
Yeah.
And like super codependent, over controlling. However, had this deep reservoir of love and affection.
Yes.
Which is perhaps harder to see in something like Mommy Dearest.
True.
Yeah. Those are not the movies you want to take your, your cues from as a mother. But Biz, you probably feel... You're doing pretty good looking at Sybil.
You're like, the Sybil mom in particular.
Yeah.
I am doing great.
Like, in your face, Sybil mom.
Oh, no. I'll take you with the purple crayon, lady.
You know what? I will say, to bridge off of that, I find it almost more damaging in terms of that comparison you were talking about. The moms in movies that are... that it's effortless.
Yeah.
I think that is harder for a mom to palate, or anyone, than it is, like, if you're watching something and you're like, oh, you're horrible. Yeah. So clearly they're the bad guy.
Yeah.
But when you're watching someone and you're like, well, why is it it's so easy? Like, that's actually such a case in television.
Yeah,
almost more than movies, because movies require a certain level of conflict that doesn't always allow for the kind of Stepford mother. But there is something to be said of when you're looking at a fictional character where it's just like effortless is the word for it, right?
Yeah.
Just, oh, they know the right thing to say and they're supportive and like never tired. They certainly never snap at their kids. Like
they definitely have high heels on and are dressed perfectly during the day.
Yes. Oh, for sure. They have the energy to keep their stuff together, and they dress the children before dinner and then like whisk them out to give their father like nod or whatever.
Whatever affection was shown.
Yeah. And I think that there's such a that era of those kinds of mothers, which was very much your sort of 1960s melodrama and just family dramas in general. I do think once you hit the 70s, there's more complexity, even in anything from as varied as like The Godfather to, you know,
the women in The Godfather are fascinating.
Mm. The mothers for me, and I had talked to you briefly beforehand about this, that I've been really grateful for the last, especially 10, 15 years, both in indie cinema and in kind of the bigger studio films. Obviously, any character that has an authenticity and a well-roundedness is grateful, or I'm grateful for, but I love seeing mothers like that. And when we talked about this subject, that the topic of mothers in movies, the first mother that came to mind to me is actually a stepmother, and she's my favorite stepmom in all of movies, Alice and Janney in the movie Juno.
Yes.
Like, it's Alice and Janney anyway, so who doesn't love her? But she plays a stepmom named Brenda, which personally I think all stepmothers should be named Brenda.
Yes.
Like, Brenda, sorry to any stepmoms out there, you have to change your name. Those are the rules. But I loved that because she doesn't have to be a stepmom. She doesn't have to be written that way. But it's also a very big reality for so many families that there's branches and different shapes to them. And so I just liked that inclusion. And I'm also from Minnesota, which is where Diablo Cody lived a lot of her life, which is where a lot of her stories are based. And man, there is something about the like... fast-talking, no-nonsense Midwestern mom that I'm just like, yes, like I'm just doing the sort of Tina Fey high-fiving a million angels motion, like, yes, Brenda. And Juno, there's an unplanned pregnancy in this teenage girl who's her stepdaughter. She ends up taking her to the obstetrician, and the woman there is kind of, the technician is very snotty to her, and Brenda gives her this dressing down, which is like... And those are the mom moments that I'm like, that's it, right? That's teaching by example. That's like having your kids back in unexpected scenarios, but not effortlessly. Like, she struggles with it. She's disappointed when she finds out she's pregnant. Like, there's layers to it. And those are the characters that I think are like so resonant.
Yeah, I'm with you. Those are qualities that I do like when I see them in the portrayals of mothers in movies. I also think that moms are portrayed well when they're portrayed as human beings.
Yes.
Like, yes. When you say well-rounded character, yes, it's like, well, they're more than just mom one, you know, like they're 100%. Yeah. So give me more.
Okay. So that's funny because the other one that came to mind right away, yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis in True Lies.
Oh, yes.
With Arnold Schwarzenegger, which you may not think of when you're like, oh, mothers in movies. Huh. Probably not the first one to come to mind, but it's exactly what you're talking about. Like, their daughter is kidnapped. That's a whole part of it, and how she's treating her. But the big thing of that, and why I think it's such an the fact that it's so successful in this type of movie makes it stand out even more, is because Jamie Lee Curtis plays a wife and a mother who is ignored in a certain kind of way and taken for granted by both her partner and her kid.
Yeah.
And that she's now just an entity that she helps sort of keep things moving. They're eating because she's somehow made food appear, yeah, as if that just happened.
Yeah.
Their lives are clean and orderly as if it just happens. And she's bored and lacking anything. And so, of course, in True Lies, her husband is secretly a spy and then sets up a whole thing and she goes on a spy adventure, which may not be an option for everybody.
No. I keep waiting.
You keep waiting. But what is an option is, it also involves her entire family having to see her, yeah, in a way that they do not.
Yes.
You know, that she is someone who wants adventure and she wants to be sexy and she wants to be recognized. And I think those are acutely familiar feelings for a lot of women.
Yeah, well, women.
Right.
let's just start off right there. But also, I think, now I got to go back and rewatch that movie, because it's everything you just described that Jamie Lee Curtis was going through, I think, is a huge part of suddenly finding kids in your house for women. Like you lose, or you have taken from you, any identity that you had before on some level, right? Like,
right,
you know, comedian, we are a mom, right? Like, when you introduce yourself, you have to be like, I'm a mother, right? Like, I could never even get those words out of my mouth because it just felt like it deleted anything else I had done prior. And I've come to grips with lots of this. But like, but it's the fact that I think there is a fantasy for many people who are mothers, as well as fathers who are the primary caregivers, of if it's the, like, this is, it's a wonderful life. Like, if you could only see, but for everybody else to see, right?
Yes.
Like, that's the flip. I see it. I see how great I am. I need everybody to acknowledge. And so, like, Jamie Lee Curtis is, wow, that is now my poster child for right? this desire. Yeah.
And thinking of the audience for a movie like True Lies.
Yeah.
I love it when there's movies that take in female consideration. One that's not, is adjacent to this, but Gina Davis in The Long Kiss Goodnight. That, again, in terms of a film that is for a broader audience that has an action element, Gina Davis plays what seems to be a stay-at-home mother who is, like, super wrapped up in her kid, and then all of a sudden realizes, like, oh, no, she's actually an assassin named Charlie Baltimore,
yes,
who has amnesia and is on the run, and she's a badass, and she can do all, she has all these knife skills, and she was like, oh, I guess I was a chef in my previous life, and like, no, you were an assassin, but the whole thing of it is, like, this connection she's made to this child, and,
yeah,
and again, anyway, so I love a good movie that can package motherhood in an unexpected way.
Now, one of my favorite movies to discuss from a feminist perspective is Alien.
Okay? I was just going to bring that up.
And I cannot believe I have never thought of it from I've always thought about, like, the alien mother versus the, like, you know, Gina, yep, Davis. But I'm thinking of the
Sigourney
alien
Weaver.
T 2 where they find Newt? They find the little girl in Alien 2 and, like, she takes on this motherhood role.
Yeah. I wrote a paper back in college about motherhood in Alien with the Ripley character, which is Sigourney Weaver's, and in the Terminator franchise, which is Sarah Connor, and the idea of the strengths of motherhood that are often sort of the assumptions that it just comes with the role. Like, you have a kid and therefore you're immediately completely protective and immediately like, sacrificial, like all of these things that come into play and then put into these sort of sci-fi action films, which I think is fascinating. And I actually, I will put in a small plug for the most recent Terminator, Dark Fate.
Oh, how is it? Is it good? I want to see it.
I dug it. I dug it because Sarah Connor comes back and she's in her 60s now. It's Linda Hamilton, total smoke show still. Mackenzie Davis plays a younger kind of hybrid Terminator human. Okay. And then there's a young, this amazing young Latina actress, like in her 20s. That's young for me, not like a child.
Right, yeah.
But who's ultimately the hero. But one of the things they talk about is Sarah as a mother, as all of these things have built into the Terminator franchise. Sarah Connor had value only because she gave birth to the boy that would become the man that would lead the rebellion. And Dark Fate kind of twists that. And
did people just hate it because of that?
I am convinced that it did okay, but it didn't do great. And I do think it's because they put, like, the women first in the marketing.
Yeah, I'm sure. No, I'm sure.
But it had a really thoughtful takeaway.
I love it.
Tickles your fancy, yeah.
I'll watch that because my favorite movies are movies in which people beat the shit out of each other. For justified reasons. Usually justified reasons make me the most happy, but occasionally I'll just watch something where people are beating the crap out of each other. So, hence, True Lies. But now I'm going to need to go watch the new Terminator movie.
Dark Fate. Yeah,
Dark Fate. I'm way into that. Let me let this segue briefly into talking about movies as an escape. You know, I know a lot of people. My husband is a huge movie watcher. I used to be a very big movie watcher, and then I just got too tired to stay up late. But I know that movies definitely offer an escape for him, especially right now. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, your thoughts on movies as a form of escape, especially right now.
One of the things that I always talk about films as having is flavors. Mm. And I think, like, the same as eating, you're just in different moods for different flavors at different times.
Nice.
And there's also some shit you just never like. Some people don't like spicy food and some people don't like horror films. And that is totally fine. Like, flavor is flavor. I think for me right now, I have discovered I am coasting on, like, much like if I went two steps further, I would basically just eat donuts for all meals. Like, that's the kind of movies I'm looking for right now, of like, oh, is there a powdered sugar donut movie? That's what I'm wanting. So I'm personally, my escapism is almost exclusively like Agatha Christie adaptations of octogenarian lady detectives living in a small village, dealing with vicars.
Yes.
Like, that stuff is great for me. I'm like, it's manageable. It's in like the 1940s. So I not only know the bad stuff that's coming for them, I know what's coming for a long time. So that's where I'm ending up. I think the other thing that's become key at this point with us all at home and with people looking at both, like, for you, if you're thinking of viewing as, oh, I have an hour to myself somewhere, so I want to watch something. Or I think we're viewing things as a family differently.
Yeah.
And I think that people's time with screens and people's time watching has had to sort of change and shift with all this going on. And I've always looked at movies as being a social entertainment yeah. rather than just a, you know, it seems like they're quiet and it seems like it's an individual thing, but I look at them as it's both the movie that you're sharing, but then also what conversations are you having afterwards? What callbacks, what ongoing jokes does that set off with you and your family, whoever you've watched something with? So those are the things that I think a lot of people and a lot of my, like I said, my mom friends are berating themselves right now of, oh, we're watching so much stuff. And yeah. to me, I'm like, no, that's A-okay.
Well, like a family bonding experience with it.
Yeah,
you know what? That's really interesting. I will say that movies, my relationship with movies has, but for the most part, been in a movie theater. And the bonding, even though I don't know the people in the theater, there are many movies that when I recall the movie, I'm also recalling the experience of the movie, like the people watching it around me. Opening night of Jurassic Park was that. Star Trek, you know, pretty much any original Star Trek, you know, when Spock died. Holy shit. But like, I remember my father and I coming to visit Los Angeles. He was coming out for a work trip. And at the time we were living in Alabama. And we go to like the Chinese theater in Hollywood. We go in. And to be honest, I don't remember what movie we were going to see. But the lights go down and the trailers start to play. And it's pitch black dark. You know, all the lights out. And then you hear, dun dun, dun dun, and then dun 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 dun, dun, dun. And it's in all blackness, nice. And it's the Rocky theme, and it's for like Rocky 2 or 3, I think it's 3, and everybody in the theater goes ape shit crazy. It's like USA versus Russia, right? Everybody, and to, like, that will always, like, have this, like, physical sensation, like, memory, like a physical yes. memory when I think about that. And I think I definitely feel like I have taken for granted the movie theater experience and recently,
yeah.
you know, as a parent and just, like, time, and we all get to reevaluate all of our choices, guys, right. right during this time together and apart. Yeah, I see that. I think that that's something that could be very interesting to see where we come out
yeah.
in terms of how we are experiencing movies and how our kids are experiencing them. One Bad Mother is supported in part by Candlewick Press, publishers of Baby Clown, the hilarious new picture book about a frazzled circus family when its newest star is born. Award-winning author Kara LaRoe and Call Dot medalist illustrator Matthew Cordell juggle wit and warmth in a story relatable to any parent or caregiver who has tried just about everything to soothe a wailing baby. Baby Clown, available now wherever books are sold.
Hey, you know what it's time for? This week's Genius and Fails. This is the part of the show where we share our genius moment of the week, as well as our failures, and feel better about ourselves by hearing yours. You can share some of your own by calling 206-350-9485. That's 206-350-9485.
Genius! Fail time, Treya. Genius me.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
I saw what you did.
Oh my God.
I'm paying attention.
Wow.
You, Mom, are a genius.
Oh my God, that's fucking genius.
All right. So we are coming off of Mother's Day weekend, and we're obviously all in different spaces. I also live, like, my parents retired to Northern California and my sister's in New York and my brother's in Minnesota. So we're kind of all over the place anyway. And we've been Zooming more regularly. And my genius was, I was very proud for our like Mother's Day Clark family Zoom, I put together a scavenger hunt for each of their houses.
What?
And then like I shared a screen. I gave them team names based on their names. Like I did portmanteaus of like, yeah, I was very like my sister's name is Bevan and her husband's name is Bill and their kids' names start with J-A and their team name was Bill Bev Javot.
No.
And I was like super proud of myself for that. And so they had this list and like I set up these rules like one person can be a runner for each family and they don't get a count until they bring it back and put it in front of the camera and I see it. And anyway, so it was so fun and it was this thing of it would have been fun regardless, but pulling off something right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I say pulling off really was not that difficult and I encourage you to try it.
Oh.
But I was like beaming. I was like, yes.
You are games. A fucking genius.
It was great.
That is about to be tried by lots of people.
Oh, I hope so. Please
because
do.
I am looking for anything new and
oh,
that's...
Yeah.
Amazing. I'm so torn sometimes on what I want to share, but I think I am going to, my genius is that I married well. I married somebody who likes to bake. And again, years of working through resentment of, oh, you just get to spend your time baking while I'm in China. That's all gone. And the payoff is I'm going to show this to Hannah, Andrea, Stefan has started making, we used to do this thing with kids on Monday when we picked them up from school, we'd go get donuts, and we can't do that now, and Stefan has learned how to make motherfucking donuts!
Did I not just mention donuts?
Yeah, and he just,
oh my God.
He just brought it in to me, and they are,
it
they
is beautiful.
Are delicious.
It's like a beautiful glazed donut yeah. with perfect rainbow sprinkles.
Yes.
I'm dying. And I'm very impressed.
All my mid-40s reaction to sugar is just, I don't even care. I don't even care about the headache I'm about to get.
Hi, One Bad Mothers. I'm calling with a genius today because we'll take the smallest victories where we can get them anytime. These days, my husband and I are trying to work from home with our full-time jobs while also caring for our 22-month-old. And, you know, that's been tough. And this morning, the kiddo decided to throw an epic tantrum right in the middle of a check-in that I was having over the phone with my team, and I had to jump off to deal with that because dealing with a crying child and also trying to listen to the phone call was just not compatible. And the thing that finally pulled the toddler out of his tantrum was a few wet paper towels and a large window, and we are washing the windows. And it's the simplest thing because, you know, I'm able to actually clean the white vinyl around this window that's never been cleaned for the 3 years that we've been living in this house, and the kid is no longer screaming. And, you know, I'm not getting any work done, but I'm also feeling a little bit like a genius. So you're all doing a good job. We're all surviving the best we can, and thank you for your show.
You are doing a great job. And let me tell you why I love this. I love that the genius had nothing to do with actual work. The genius was how to calm down yep. your tantruming toddler. Like, I love this. And this just goes, this just circles us all the way like back to this idea that guess what? People have children in their house and like they're not secondary, right?
They continue to exist, yeah.
They continue to exist. And I you're doing a really good job. Failures. Fail me, Drea.
Fail, 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 fail!
You suck.
Okay, so my failure is in the realm of self-care, which can sound as if it's like, oh, I didn't get enough time to give myself a facial this weekend. But no, it is as much as my exterior life is still coping okay. Like, yeah, I'm feeling decent, mental health decent. However, nighttime Drea is like joke's on you. You're going to be a teeth grinder now.
Yeah.
So I have been grinding my teeth in my sleep to the point of pain. And the saddest, the fail isn't that I'm doing that, because, man, I can't control that. It's that over a week ago, I bought a mouth guard to try and remedy this.
Yeah.
But I have not yet unwrapped it, because you have to like boil it
and do
a whole thing to like set your teeth in it. So every couple days I wake up with my jaw hurting and I'm like, you dumbass, put your freaking mouth guard together and sleep in it. Like, that's my fail. It's so stupid.
Yeah. You are doing a horrible job taking care of yourself.
Good.
We all see you.
Good.
We all.
Yep.
In one of these like bursts of, I have to reconnect with people, I have been talking to many people about the fact that I had recently bought and downloaded You Don't Know Jack and a few of the other games. In the 90s, or maybe early 2000, I don't know, however old I am, I used to play a lot of this sassy, irreverent trivia game, You Don't Know Jack. And I thought, this will be great. Yes, you can play this with multiple people. I did all this research. I'm even going to tell my school about it. We do this for like an event. Stefan and I sat down to play it, just the two of us, over the weekend. And Stefan was like, well, how do people do this if they can't see the screen? Because what you do is you see the screen where the questions come up, and then you go to like youdontknowjack.com or TV or whatever,
on
and
your
then
phone.
That's your phone, and all you see there are the answers, like as the ABC choices that you get to pick from. And that's when it hit me, oh, this is unshareable unless I like Zoom screen share. In my mind, it was the kind of thing where if I gave you the code, you would just go to your computer and you'd be able to see it too. And it's not. And I spent money on that. And like I've told lots of people, I'm ready to share this thing with you guys. And I'm like, oh, it's just going to be a lot of fucking extra work to share it. So expectations crushed.
Hi, this is a fail. I was trying to make my life easier, and I remembered that there were two more plastic plates in the back of the cabinet from when my oldest was little, so I pulled them out, and now the only thing that my 3-year-old and 2-year-old will eat off of are the Cars plate and the Toy Story 3 plate. 3 meals a day, and if we give them a different plate, they demand the Cars plate and the Toy Story plate. So I suck, and I'm doing a terrible job. I should definitely not try to make my life easier.
You clearly have listened to the show, because the fail is trying to make your life easier. We've proven that time and time again. Also, Drea, you might not know this, but 2 and 3-year-olds are kind of difficult.
Yes.
And this woman has one of both.
Yes.
In her home. So nothing is easy right now. And you are doing a horrible job just trying to make things fun.
Yes.
You can't have fun.
You are the greatest mom I've ever known. I love you. I love you. When I have a problem, I call you.
One Bad Mother is supported in part by Care.com. As the world's largest online destination for finding and managing family care, Care.com helps millions of families find high-quality care for their children, aging loved ones, homes, and pets. I need help now that school is closed. Did you know you could find a tutor to help your child continue to learn from home? Well, you can. With tools and information to guide families through the hiring process, reviews, background checks, Care.com provides a platform for finding all kinds of family care services, from child care to senior care
errands, housekeeping, and pet care. Care.com can even help you with all your household employer obligations, including payroll and taxes, with Care.com HomePay. To save 30% off a Care.com premium membership, visit care.com/badmother or use promo code badmother. Hey, Teresa, let's call someone today. This week, we are talking to Chloe Cooney, who is an advocate and writer focused on expanding access to sexual and reproductive health and rights in the United States and around the world. She lives in Washington, D.C. with her wife and son. Welcome, Chloe.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It is nice to have you here. And I just, you know, spoiler alert, gave away the answer to the first question we like to ask all our guests, but maybe something's changed. Who lives in your house?
Yeah, so I'm bunkered down here with my wife and my 5-year-old son, and whatever characters are making up the day in our house. So we've got stuffed animals and Legos, and they're, on any given day, a really active participant. So,
so did you say 5 years old?
Five, yeah. He's a 5-year-old.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people that are created.
Yeah, humans, stuffed animals, all of it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's something we've been asking guests recently. Given the current situation in the world, how are you?
You know, I mean, I feel like I'm answering this on a minute-by-minute basis, so permission to change the answer in 30 minutes. But I'm okay right now. I'm on East Coast time, so we just did dinner with my son, who had a high. We do highs and lows. He had a high today, so I feel not like the worst parent in the world.
Yeah, no, that's... a great way to like the weather. It was a nice day.
Yeah, not that I go outside these days, right?
Yeah.
But it's sunny. So I'm okay. It's Monday, which is always like the day you sort of, I'm already really behind this week, but my son, you know, was okay at dinner and we all had dinner together. So that's a win, I would say.
Yeah. No, that's a win. You got to take the wins
where
you can.
My other win is that he is in his PJs all day, but it's not the same as yesterday.
Ooh, that is very good.
As long as we're not doing PJs, the same PJs for 2 days in a row, I feel victorious.
Chloe, we have had you here because you wrote pretty much a spot on article that came out really at the beginning of all of the sheltering in place. When this started, our first show of the COVID times definitely touched base on some shit hitting the fan when it comes to responsibility of all sorts, emotional well-being of small people in our house, educational well-being, we refer to it as president of everything. And you wrote this article, "The Parents Are Not All Right." It is for us to have to shelter in place at the same time that we wrestle constantly with the image of parenting, the image of motherhood, the image of perfection and Pinterest and Instagram and fucking everything. I would really like you to talk about why, I can tell you why, but why, thank you for saying it. What led to the article for you? Let's just start there.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, I think like so many of us in DC started, I think only a few days after, maybe a week later after California, but and that first Monday we woke up where this was like what was happening. I was like, am I in a satire? Like,
yeah,
I feel like I'm in a spoof movie. And it just, the impossibility kind of came crushing down on me. And, you know, I had my little homeschool box ready to go. I was going to create a routine. And I didn't have like big expectations. Like, I was not delusional about what I could do. And it was so hard. And I was so angry at how hard it was, and that was sort of not part of the conversation. And every parent I knew was having that feeling. And over, the first few weeks, it was parents were all talking to each other going, oh my God, this is fucking impossible. But I didn't see that coming out in the broader landscape. Yeah, and I was disheartened. And then I started to hear discourse like about a month in of people online, out in the world, of people sort of saying, oh, the parents at work, it was hard, but they're fine now. And I was like, oh, I know they're not fine. I mean, I'm talking to enough of them. I know they're not fine. And I just sort of, it made me enraged. that was kind of it. And I was so sort of worked up that I just sort of, threw up on the page.
Yeah.
And I felt, and it was because it felt invisible. It was clear to me that what was happening was so obvious to every parent I knew and so invisible to every non-parent I knew. And I was so mad that it wasn't just coming up in a part of the conversation, that this is a big load to bear. And I'm still disheartened, frankly, that it's not more a part of it. I mean, we're talking about states reopening, and we're not putting childcare as a central contingency on that. I think there's been more conversation since the essay came out, for sure, but it still feels like it's cloistered among parent groups. And it's not mainstream yet. And it's disheartening, because I think
families have never been mainstream.
Yeah.
What is true is that we know they exist, right? Clearly, kids are in people's houses. But other than that, they exist totally separately than what we deem as reality, which is work. For me, the thing that kind of pokes my enrage button right now is a lot of articles that have been coming out recently, like, maybe now. We'll see. Maybe now we'll have universal healthcare. Maybe now we'll have parental leave that makes sense. Maybe now women will be seen as not the assumed sacrificer of career in a dual household. The article really touches on this. You have a thing in there that says, viruses, or in this case, global pandemics, expose and exacerbate the existing dynamics of a society. It's very well said. That was a lot more concise than whatever I just yelled out. And one of these dynamics is the burden we put on individual parents and families. And we're asking them to solve it. Here we are, 2.5 months really into this. Where do you see us from when this started and you wrote this article, and where we are now?
Yeah, well, I mean, just to go back to what you were saying before about, viruses exacerbate, and it's something I work in global health, so I see these dynamics. Anytime there's a crisis, you see whatever the sort of fault lines are come out. I mean, I think we're seeing it in the deaths. The death toll of COVID is disproportionately leaning on people of color, and that's not because of the disease, it's because of racism, and that's an existing fault line. And it was, I think in writing this essay, part of what also motivated it was, I know that we're really privileged. Like, we have two parents to one kid, like the ratio's good.
Yeah.
I mean, we're his entire social network, but nonetheless, the ratio for caretaking is good. We both are employed. Both of our jobs can be done from home, right? Like, we can do it remotely. I know people whose jobs cannot be done remotely, right? Our families are not impacted by COVID right now. Like, none of our parents are not sick.
Right.
So all of the above, and yet it still felt so hard. And I knew it's that much worse for folks who don't have the same opportunities and resources that my family does. We're two moms, and both of, as a consequence, sort of like socially expected to be the caregivers in our families. Like, I've talked to friends who have a very co-equal partnership in their household, and yet, their husband's employers don't respect that they have childcare responsibilities. And I think that's happening a lot. I think it's also probably harder in some cases for men in workplaces to, speak up and raise their hand and say, I can't do it. Whereas, like, I was pregnant, I was breastfeeding at my office. I mean, I've done it all.
Yeah.
outright. And again, I'm not a person who ever felt like I had kept my parenting invisible. I didn't feel overly like I had to separate those things. It's just the situation and what's sort of asked of all of us, employers and employees alike, is really impossible at the end of the day. So I do think something's coming up, but I'm getting increasingly, you know, the outpouring to the essay was really overwhelming and validating in some ways, but it was also very heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think I was alone. I talked to enough people to know that this was not, you know, a unique experience, but I didn't expect to hear it as widely as I did. I mean, one person on my Facebook feed was like, oh, it's all over Cyprus. And I was like, what? I mean, it's like all over the world, people were sharing it and reaching out to me. I got a bunch of people from Europe saying, oh, I thought this was written by someone in Europe. And you know, honestly, naively, I did think this was maybe more of an American burden because we don't have universal health care, because we don't have parental leave. And I have no doubt that the fact that we don't have universal health care is making this harder and the pressures greater for so many families. But it turns out that this experience of having to do both things at once is being felt around the world. And parents are feeling that. But and when you look at who are the, you know, frontline healthcare workers around the world, they're predominantly women. Who are the caregivers around the world? They're predominantly women. They're predominantly the same people.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, it doesn't work. Like, this is crazy. So I think that there's been increased awareness, but I'm, you know, now 2.5 months in, I guess, getting a little disheartened that it's not top of mind. And it's not, as I said, top of mind as we talk about reopening states. You know, when are places going to reopen? Well, to me, it's such a moot point until you talk about when schools are reopening and when it's safe to do so.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't know when our school's going to reopen. There's an assumption fall.
At this point, I'm like hoping fall.
Yeah, we're hoping fall. But even then, you know that it could be maybe 2 days a week.
Right.
And then 3 days home learning or half a day or, you know, this rotating schedule. You know, it's like I keep thinking, okay, I have a flexible schedule as a podcaster. Okay. So I get to do my work at night when everybody's done. My partner, he, you know, definitely has been working from home and strangely has a ton of work, sometimes at night, sometimes, you know, very early. And I get it. Like, I get it. Right. But like, even, and I think this is something that we don't touch on enough too. Just because I have the time to do it comparatively doesn't mean I enjoy it or, you know, or am feeling rewarded by it or want to do it. I wonder about the mental health of parents coming out of this. And that's also not being discussed. So fix it. Can you fix it for us? And I know the answer is no, but.
It's interesting. One of the, a bunch of the reactions I've gotten from the essay were also from people who weren't two working parent families. Mm-hmm. Someone was home and they were like, it's still hard. And the reality is, you know, parenting is a group sport. Like, we're not built to be like sequestered and, you know, our kids need to go to playgrounds and run around. Like, they staying inside is, you know, that's one of the hardest things I think for us right now is watching our son. He won't go outside right now. And we have to like kind of force him into the car and drive somewhere far away to like a forest or something. And I know a lot of kids are like that right now, but it's not good. Like, I'm worried that he's not moving more. And I think it's hard no matter what. The extra layer of the working and not having that flexibility that some people are, I mean, I've heard stories too from parents who have really no flexibility, and it's really outrageous. I'm like, give me your boss's email.
Yeah. I am going to email them this article. That's right. I am going to Zoom bomb the shit out of this. Tits out. Like, we are going for it. I'm just going to fill the screen with children.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have any, I mean, I, you know, I feel very, you know, by in a very supportive space. It's just, it doesn't change the fundamentals of, like, what's happening. And I do, I think it's so, the mental health. I mean, the other thing I've been thinking about a lot is parents are multitasking 100% of the time now. Like, there is not a moment in the day mm-hmm. when my brain is not in at least three places. And, you know, you could say, oh, isn't that normal? But not like this, right?
No, it's not the same.
It's not the same.
And, you know, it's not, this is not the same as homeschooling. This is not the same as, you know, a week off. It's not the same as normal parenting, which is already a shit show. Right. Of just of different, like, all the time. Let me wrap up on this. Is there one thing that we can yell about the most?
I mean, I think right now, you know, my biggest takeaway is we don't as a society value caregiving enough.
Yeah.
And that's evident across this epidemic. Right. Like teachers, frontline health workers, right? Like across the board, we don't value caregiving as an enterprise, and yet it is fundamental to our society, to functioning. And as a friend of mine said on Twitter, parents are essential workers. And I think that's right. So I would love to re-envision, you know, we talk about like the sort of world post-COVID and sort of America 2.0 or I don't know, 6.0, right. I don't know what number we're on. And I'd love for caregiving to be a fundamental pillar that we build out from and think about. But at the minimum, we should be talking about our management of this epidemic with that as a central focus, I think. We should be thinking about what are reopening strategies tied to what parents and people who are giving, it's not just parents. I mean, it's all forms of caregivers who are on the front lines need, because the tools for employers are not great either. Right. It's not like a good guy, bad guy thing at all. It's that we don't have the tools as a society to do this well. So I think putting that central focus of caregiving, of parenting as a really key element and a precondition of the next stages would be the thing I'm focused on today. But I do think it's a much bigger conversation.
100%. And maybe we'll just have to have you come back and have a bigger conversation.
<We'll love it>.
Chloe, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for writing that article. It definitely made me and many of our listeners feel seen, and that's what we really need right now. So
agreed.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, and this conversation made me feel more sane, so thank you.
Oh good.
For that.
Oh, I see the shit out of you right now. All right, well,
all right,
stay
have a good
safe
one.
You too.
Take care.
Bye.
Strange planets, curious technology, and a fantastic vision of the distant future. Featuring Martin Starr.
So we're going on day 14. Shuttle still hasn't come.
Aparna Nancherla.
The security system provides you with emotional security. You do the rest.
Echo Kellum.
Can you disconnect me or not?
Hari Kondabolu.
I'm staying.
From Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Jeffrey McGivern.
Could you play Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun?
It's The Outer Reach. Stories from beyond.
Now available for free at MaximumFun.org or anywhere you listen.
I can't hear myself, but I'm assuming.
These are real podcast listeners, not actors.
Hey, thanks for coming. Here's a list of descriptors. What would you choose to describe the perfect podcast?
I mean, vulgarity.
Dumb. Definitely dumb.
And like, right here, this one, meritless.
What if I told you there was a podcast that did have all of that?
No.
Jordan, Jesse, Go. And it's free.
Jordan, Jesse, go.
Jordan, Jesse, go. A real podcast.
Oh my God. I love talking to Chloe. It's like she says all the things that I feel. Speaking of saying all the things that I feel, let's listen to a mom have a breakdown.
I'm just calling to rant. I'm on week 4 of homeschooling, and I have a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old, and a husband who is an essential worker, so he's out working. Nothing too crazy with the front lines, but I tried so hard today. I tried to make fucking slime with them. It was a disaster. Everyone screamed and cried, and it stuck everywhere. Okay, fine. They watched some TV. They did some learning things. I snuggled them. I read them books. Now I'm trying to do art practice with them, and everyone is fucking mad about it. So I suggested we take a break. And they can't take a break. They can't let it go. And my 7-year-old's following me around asking me to help him. I said, I tried. He was like, when did you try? When did you try? And I said, I tried when I fucking did the art project with you. I've never done this before. I just tried. I need a break. And here comes a 5-year-old. Thanks. You're doing a good job.
Okay. First of all, you are doing a really good job. One of my favorite parts, it's weird to say I have a favorite part about moms having breakdowns, but one of my favorite parts was where you just started right at the beginning. I tried really hard today. Yeah. And I could, this might have to be a topic for a future show. I tried really hard today. And that's what we're all trying to do, is just like try really hard, because everybody's like, be present in the day. It's just like one step. And so you are, and you're rewarded with screaming and crying. And this goes right to the heart of the fallacy of like fucking Instagram and Facebook and Pottery Barn catalogs and some of those movies and TV shows. You only see the perfect cookies after they're done being made. No one posts pictures of the kids crying during the science experiment with the balloon and the shaving cream. No one sees the like 30 minutes it takes to set that shit up for the 5 minutes of like art. That still gets met with like resentment, right, and anger. And then the like hour of having to clean all that shit back up. Like I think if I may, being home all the time and being responsible for the emotional, educational, and many other old well-beings of these little people in our house is when they start screaming and yelling during the fun thing that you planned, you really can feel kicked in the boob, right? Like you can just kicked whatever part of your body you don't want to be kicked in. I've recently been kicked a lot in the boob by Ellis, and he is just way too big to be crawling on me, but there we go. Regression is fun. Maybe in the nuts, maybe in the knee, maybe just right in the face. That's a good play. You're getting kicked there. Like, how are you supposed to walk away from that?
This is so hard because I hear this. And again, as a mom ally and not a mom, I am also someone who, I'm a daughter. I don't know if I included that in my bio.
I'm going to assume.
Oh, sure, sure. But I have these very acute memories of my mother, especially when it became a nightmare preteen teenager.
Yeah.
That the most regular thing she would say when she was disappointed or upset with me was saying how I was ungrateful. And I think that is something that parents feel so acutely. And I hear her, and the idea of putting this whole thing together, I'm already like, oh, you just did 15 more things than I did today. You made slime. I don't even know what that entails, let alone Googling it and getting the crap for it and setting up. dealing with three humans? No, forget it. But that you're met with, when did you try? Oh, no.
And then this all cycles back to some sort of guilt that I haven't been doing enough in letting my children figure things out on their own. Mm. So again, full circle, you are doing a really good job.
Such a good job.
Drea, what have we learned today? We have learned that to find the most realistic versions of motherhood, find it in action movies.
An unexpected education for us. Yes.
Yeah. I think that and treat mothers like the individuals and selves and fully developed people that they are or once were.
Yes. Yes. They contain multitudes. I also think the power of recognizing a character going through a struggle you relate to is not a small one. I think the idea of seeing yourself in a story is huge. And
yes.
I think of forgiving yourself for embracing stories through the screen is key. I really do.
Yes. I would rather, there are days for sure that we are so screened out with the Zooms and the learning and, you know, some days you're learning math online on a website. Some days you're just printing things out. Like, all the screen time that goes in to learning from home makes you not ever want to be on a screen again. Maybe we should just nix that screen time and only watch movies, like, all day. Like, a bigger screen just feels like a more valid screen.
Yes.
I'm going to let that be one of my takeaways from the day. Everybody, you are doing a remarkable job. This is just a remarkably fucked up and confusing time on top of all of the other stuff. I mean, like, it's you still, there's still work, or maybe there's not work right now. And those are really stressful. There are possibly kids in your house. That is incredibly stressful. Everybody is making it work the way it works best. And tomorrow you might realize it didn't and you want to try something else. We all get to keep trying new stuff. You're doing a remarkable job. We see the shit out of you. And let's go out and see the shit out of each other right now. And you are remarkable. Drea, thank you so much for joining me today. This was absolutely amazing. And I will 100% have you back on to just talk feminist movies with me.
I would love to.
Because that could just be a lot of fun, and we all need to not have something else to focus on. And me on a soapbox is a lot of fun. and everybody should go check out Who Shot You. Thank you also for being an ally. And you are doing a very good job.
Thank you, Biz. I had so much fun here. I got to talk about helping my friend's kid with Romeo and Juliet, which is all I've really wanted to talk about for weeks now, and it's no one else has asked, so this was a great thing for me. I would like to say I love this show. I love the energy of it. I love all moms swearing in their heads, cursing their hearts out as they stare at a small, angry child dealing with their slime. So good job to them. Great job to you, Biz. You're keeping it going.
We're doing it.
You're getting
it
done. Day by day. One day at a time.
That's right. And we're going to do it again next week, guys. Come hell or high water. We will talk to you next week. Bye. Bye.
I got to low down mama blues. I got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blue, low down mama blue. Got to low down mama blue, got to low down mama blue.
you know that right.
We'd like to thank Max Fun, our producer, Hannah Smith, our husbands, Stephen Lawrence and Jesse Thorne, our perfect children who provide us with inspiration to say all these horrible things, and of course, you, our listeners. To find out more about the songs you heard on today's podcast and more about the show, please go to MaximumFun.org/OneBadMother. For information about live shows, our book, and press, please check out OneBadMotherPodcast.com.
One Bad Mother is a member of the Maximum Fun family of podcasts. To support the show, go to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Daddy, baby, bussin' by, got low down mama blue. Oh, said daddy, baby, bussin' by.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned, audience supported.